Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. What would you expect from a band called Teen? A bunch of teenagers, right? Probably playing some teen-oriented pop, right? And that might be enough to scare some of you off, but fear not, because the band Teen is actually all grown-up indie rockers from Brooklyn, and they take their name from their front woman, Teenie Lieberson, who might have thought twice before naming her band, but what's done is done, and Teenie and her two sisters will join us to play a couple of songs, including a brand new one. Now, here's something that we've specifically designed to scare some of you off. Halloween is just a few days away, and that means it's time for us to kick off a nightmarish series of shows called
Soundcheck's House of Horrors.
Wow, that sounds scary. And expensive. And joining me now is the guy who watches our budget, Soundcheck executive producer Joel Meyer. Wow.
Yeah, you know, John, not as expensive as it sounds. All that we did is we just put an iPhone in your office and hit record on the little voice memo thing. And that's what it sounds like in your office on a regular Monday morning.
So, House of Horrors, what will unfold over the next couple of days?
This is going to be really scary, John. We're going to celebrate Halloween this week on Soundcheck a bunch of different ways, sort of looking at the scary side of music and the scary side of sound as well. I'm really excited about something we're doing later in the week. We're going to be talking with the sound supervisor from American Horror Story, Coven.
You girls need to learn to fight. When witches don't fight, we burn.
This is, John, a horror TV show on the FX network. Okay, so this is the guy that coordinates sound effects and all the various ambient sounds that you hear on it. So we're going to hear how they make that show sound scary.
But there's a literal House of Horrors that will come into play, right?
Exactly. Now, sometimes, John, to get ideas for the things that we do on Soundcheck, we don't have to go very far. And in this case, we went across the street. Across the street from the WNYC studios is Blood Manor, one of the New York area's premier haunted houses. We're going to talk with the proprietors of that haunted house, and we're also going to send two of our producers into the haunted house, and we may never see them again.
On tonight's show, in fact, we'll be doing something House of Horror-y.
That's right. You guys know Kristen and Rafer from the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. You hear them on the Takeaway, or maybe you listen to their podcast, or you've heard them here on Soundcheck. Kristen and Rafer are going to come on the show tonight and talk about scary sounds in movies and scary soundtracks as well.
But now there's another part of our week-long House of Horrors here on Soundcheck, and this is going to involve our listeners as well.
That's right. We want to bring you, the listener, through the House of Horrors, and we're doing that by asking you the question, who is the scariest musician ever? Now, you can interpret that question, who is the scariest musician ever, however you want. It could be scary people who make scary recordings, or people that have been scary in concerts that you've been to, or scary in some other sort of amazing supernatural way. You can interpret however this
one. Or just strike awe into your heart.
That's
or something like that.
So there's a couple of ways that you can respond. You can leave a message on our listener line, which we love hearing from you guys, 866-939-1612. You can also post a comment on soundcheck.org, or you can tweet us using the hashtag #scariestmusician.
All right. Now, just to get the listener juices flowing, we have been kind of assembling a series of answers to this question from some of our recent musical guests. And again, the question is, who is the scariest musician ever?
All right. So first up, John, I want to play for you a response from New York hip-hop legend Daryl McDaniels, better known as DMC, one of the original three members of Run DMC.
This speech is my recital. I think it's very vital to rock
around.
That's right.
On top.
It's tricky. It's tight.
Here we go.
Ozzy Osbourne, even though, you know, he's a rock star, his movements, the way he speaks, the records that he made, even everything that happened in his real life, he's really a monster. For real. Think about it. Even now, the way he moves across that stage, it's eerie. I was going to say Alice Cooper, but it's definitely for real. It's Ozzy Osbourne.
Mr. Crowley, what went on in your head? Oh, Mr. Crowley, did you talk to the dead?
Okay, now we also had in the studio Bryce Dessner, the composer and one of the twin guitarists in the rock band The National. Here's his response.
I used to think it was Ozzy Osbourne, but I think that less now. I would say I ran into Slash from Guns N' Roses in the hallway once of a festival in Ireland. And he is an imposing figure. He was shirtless and he is incredibly muscular. And I don't know that I'd want to like run into him in a dark alleyway. So I would say that Slash is, he also has a scary name.
All right, so I actually find Axl Rose a little scary as well, if we're going to talk Guns N' Roses. But
that's the way I would have gone, too.
But Slash, yeah, he's got that kind of Mad Hatter look to him. So
okay, then, John, we invited White Denim in. These are this is a sort of psychedelic indie rock band from Austin, Texas. They have a great new album called Corsicana Lemonade that we're big fans of in the Soundcheck offices. And their bass player, Steve Terabecki, had a slightly different reaction to the question, who is the scariest musician ever?
You know, it's weird. The first person that came to mind was Avril Lavigne.
The first person that came to mind.
It was. And I don't know why, but I guess part of it is the fact that she married Chad Kroeger from Nickelback. And she's in her early 30s and still makes, like, music or just acts like she's 17 years old, and it's just, it totally freaks me out.
So, Joel, as you were saying before, you know, you can take this question, who is the scariest musician ever, in any number of directions, and certainly Steve from the band White Denim took it in an unexpected direction.
That's right. And, you know, something that isn't unexpected, once again, Nickelback just getting kicked in the shorts on Soundcheck again. There's really never been a non-sarcastic word said about that band on our show.
All right. So who else?
Also, okay, the pianist Valentina Lisitsa was in the studio here, a fantastic performance. And she had a response that comes from a very different genre.
Probably Shostakovich, because again, how many pieces of music do you get to play when you actually have to graphically describe death?
This is the Shostakovich Sonata number two.
Yes. It's a dying. It's a process of dying. They say there is a beating heart which stops.
And you hear the beating heart stop in the piece.
Yes, yes. It goes slower, slower. And right, it's absolute, you know, it's a copy of EKG.
Of EKG?
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that. I was not into those details.
That is a pretty scary piece.
Yes.
All right, a little Shostakovich for your Halloween pleasure,
that's
I guess.
That's a super creepy response.
Again, really
EKGs,
is.
I didn't think were going to come out of this this question.
All right. Once again, Soundcheck's executive producer Joel Meyer sharing some of the answers we've gotten over the past couple of weeks from some of our musical guests to our question of the week. Who is the scariest musician ever? You got one more for us?
Okay, here's one more. We just had John Paul Keith in the studio. He's a sort of roots rocker, alt-country, kind of hard to place him, but very classic rock and roll sound. Fantastic new album that I really love called Memphis Circa 3 AM. As the title implies, he's based in Memphis, has lived there for about almost 10 years, and is really, as we found out, really kind of like a, you know, budding historian of the Memphis music scene. Mm-hmm. And so naturally, his answer has a little something to do with another favorite son of Memphis.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Why?
He's the killer. You never know what he's going to do. I do know there's some bullet holes in various buildings in Memphis that he's responsible for. So, you know, he's the killer. You know, you can't be the greatest rock and roller that ever lived and be a safe, productive member of society.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
John, the scariest thing about Jerry Lee Lewis is like, well, how old are those bullet holes? Are those bullet holes from the 60s or 70s? Or are those bullet holes from, like, May?
All right, Soundcheck listeners, who is or was the scariest musician ever? Interpret the question however you want. Answer it in one of these ways. Leave a voicemail on our listener line at 866-939-1612 or post a comment on our website, soundcheck.org, or tweet us. Even right now, with the hashtag Scariest Musician. All right, Joel, thanks for bringing some of these by, and we'll probably have more during the course of the week.
We absolutely will. Thanks, John.
All right, and coming up next, Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer are the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast, and they have a special Halloween-themed segment to share with us coming up in just a moment on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It takes a lot to make a great horror film. You need great makeup and special effects, lots of tight close-ups, and some passable acting. But you also need great sound. Think of all those great sonic moments from old horror classics, the panicked hyperventilating of a lone camerawoman in the Blair Witch Project.
I'm scared to close my eyes. I'm scared to open them.
Or this score from the Halloween franchise, composed by the director, John Carpenter. Well, Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman are the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast, and they're here with me in
Soundcheck's House of Horrors.
Welcome.
Hi, John.
Now, you guys, in your role as movie daters, must see your fair share of horror flicks, right?
Indeed we do.
They come up year-round and, oh,
more
so
than
many
our
of
fair
them.
Share.
So are there particular sounds that, I mean, how much of the mood of a genuinely scary movie can you attribute to the sound and the music?
So much of it. You can take a scene that looks totally benign, like somebody walking down a hallway or shampooing their hair or even just, you know, getting dressed in the morning, and it can become so menacing and so creepy depending on what music is playing with that.
And there are also kind of, Rafer, there are sound effects. There's the famous scream that seems to be in, like, you know, dozens of movies. You know, thunderclaps and, you know, creaking stairs and stuff. Do those things, have they become cliches, or can they still work?
I feel like they've become cliches in a lot of ways. I think the music box has become a real cliche. You see the music box pop up in a lot of movies. I think that's getting a little tired. Mm. The self-rocking rocking chair, you know, the creak of that. I feel like that's
so
been done a little
scary.
Bit. Kristen's still scared.
Well, now this gets to why we brought the two of you in today to our House of Horrors. We've asked each of you to come up with a sonically scary moment from a movie that still scares you but doesn't necessarily work for the other. So, Kristen, let's start with you.
You know, I don't think there's anything creepier than children's voices or children's toys. I know Rafer totally disagrees with me right now. If you could see him, he's smiling from ear to ear and laughing because he thinks this is cliche, but children are so creepy. They have those high kind of screechy voices that are out of control. Who knows where those voices are going? And then the kids are so easily possessed by evil. You can possess a kid no matter what you do. In The Omen, in The Exorcist, just possess a kid. And then finally, they look so small and innocent.
Do you have a maternal bone in your body, Kristen?
I love kids. Kids and I get along super well. But, you know, one of the problems with kids is I get along with them. They're so sweet. They're so lovable. But that innocence can belie the truth, which is they can get away with murder if they want to. And anybody who has kids knows that kids can get away with murder.
All right. Give me an example from a scary movie.
Well, I think that Poltergeist is the classic version of a kid sounding voice in the background, la, 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 and evil, pure right. creepy evil.
Here's Little Carol Ann and the Carol Ann theme from the Poltergeist soundtrack.
What do you look like? Talk loud, I can't hear you! Hey, hello! Hello, I can't hear you!
Now, if I'm listening to that children's choir and I'm seeing a meadow with flowers and little bunnies and deer walking by, that's not scary.
What kind of children are in that field, John? Are they children of the corn?
Yeah.
Seriously, these are scary, scary sounding little children. They seem so innocent, but don't look too closely into that TV because you know what's going to happen.
But Rafer, this doesn't work for you.
You know,
did it work for you at first?
I have to admit, Poltergeist is a pretty good choice. And what's great about that clip that you played is you can kind of hear the music talking back to her a little bit. You know, you hear the string sort of dripping that way and kind of filling in for whoever that ghost is. But I have to say, again, it's like that darn self-rocking chair. It's been used so much. The children's nursery rhyme, you know, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you.
Oh,
I feel like it's lost its power for me over the years.
Well, you know, there's this great scene in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds where Melanie is outside the school and inside you hear the kids, they're singing Ristlety Rosslety, which is an old Southern American folk song. And they're singing, and she doesn't know it, but all the birds are, remember
the jungle gym behind her.
So, you know, there is absolutely nothing scary about this song. This song goes back, you know, at least 150, maybe 200 years or more in this country. And yet in this scene, it becomes really scary.
She turns the fire in her dance boots, ristlety, rosslety, now, now, now. And for a catch, she used her foot. Ristlety, rosslety, hey, Johnny, dosslety, nickety, knackety, rusty, quality, willity, wallety, now, now, now. The water.
You can hear Melanie, who is actress Tippi Hedren, lighting up a cigarette in the foreground. The kids are off in the background, which adds to the creepy factor, wouldn't you say, Rafer?
It's the cavernousness of that sound. If they were just sort of there in front of you in
exactly.
the yard, it wouldn't be nearly as scary. That's true.
So
you guys are making me come around.
All right, okay. Well, we're speaking with Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. We're talking about scary sounds, scary soundtracks from classic horror films or not-so-classic horror films. Rafer, what scares you?
Well, you know, I think people scare me the most. I think, you know, a lot of the religious supernatural movies, which I love, they don't quite hit me where it counts the way that a movie about, let's say, a serial killer or an insane person or somebody, an actual living human is coming after you. And that's why, for my pick, I chose Blue Velvet.
Blue Velvet. So this features a very sinister cover.
Yes, at least to me, I think most people would agree. It's a cover of the Roy Orbison song, In Dreams. Mm-hmm. The scene that I was thinking of, there are two instances of it in the film. The scene I'm thinking of is the very first one. Kyle MacLachlan and Isabella Rossellini have just been caught by Dennis Hopper, who mm-hmm. plays her psychotic, monstrous lover slash tormentor. And of course, as people like that do, he decides to take them to a party, a quote-unquote party, where the evening's entertainment is Dean Stockwell in this weird drag 60s lounge singer costume, and he's going to do a karaoke version of In Dreams, singing into a lamplight. And I just found it a completely horrifying, dreadful scene.
From the horrifying and dreadful mind of filmmaker David Lynch.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away into the magic night. I softly say.
So, Rafer, you're saying that lip-syncing scares you?
Well, you know, I think what scares me, what you can't see in that clip is the face of Dennis Hopper, who is going through this range of emotions. We don't know what he's thinking, but he clearly has some very unpleasant connotations to this song, and his face is contorting in rage. And I feel like what that song gets to, this is a Roy Orbison specialty, what that song gets to is male self-pity, mm-hmm. which I think is a really dangerous emotion. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that scene really captures it well.
Kristen, does it scare you? He does mention clowns in the lyrics.
That's true.
Clowns are terrifying, but this scene is not. If you look at this scene as it's unfolding, it's a lot of people in very brightly colored 1980s clothes with close-ups of them just staring off into space. It looks almost like a Saturday Night Live skit. Mm. Every time I see this clip, I laugh and laugh and laugh. There's nothing menacing about it. The only menacing thing is that it's trying so hard to be creepy, but it's not succeeding, and there's something sad about that.
And once you've seen Blue Velvet and you've seen Dennis Hopper with the gas mask attached, you know, up to it, even when he doesn't have it, it's just like permanently attached to his face. You know?
I agree.
Now, I mean, that reminds me of a great moment in A Clockwork Orange, at the end of A Clockwork Orange, where the song Singing in the Rain, you know, this kind of classic great American songbook, our parents grew up loving this song, suddenly turns into a cinema creep fest.
At the stormy crowd's chase, everyone from the place, come on with the rain, I've a smile on my face. I walk down the lane to a
Singing in the Rain. I mean, you know, way too young to have grown up with Singing in the Rain, but I grew up with that version of Singing in the Rain. That will always be a scary song for me.
Right. Kubrick was great at that. I think he also did that with Dr. Strangelove. He ended with an old classic that's a very upbeat.
Right. It's a Wonderful World.
Till we meet again.
Till we meet again?
Yeah.
And the Vera Lynn song?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has that weird effect of being sort of happy, but you know something's creepy is going on.
So it's the juxtaposition, right, of, you know, what should be a happy song with terrible goings-on on screen.
Yeah. Tarantino tried to do a lot of that when he first started out, too. It became kind of, I'm going to say it, a little bit overused at a certain point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. We're speaking with Kristen Meinzer and Rafer Guzman, the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. They are here in Soundcheck's House of Horrors. Let's talk actual soundtracks. Kristen, give me an example of a movie score that really got you.
I don't think there's anything scarier out there than the Omen soundtrack. This won an Oscar. It is so scary. It's so terrifying. It's tapping into a lot of the fears we all have that have a relationship to religion, to punishment, to a preacher at the pulpit. And you hear this heavy organ. You hear this choir. You don't know what they're saying. It sounds something about Jesus. It sounds something about Satan. And it reminds you of somebody at the pulpit pounding it, just saying, you're in trouble, you're going to hell. Oh, you are, because there's an omen here. He's going to take you down with him. And anything that just seems totally benign in the movie, like there's one scene.
There is nothing benign in that movie.
That's true.
That movie scared the pants off
It's a scary movie, but there are scenes where it's just like, look, it's, you know, it's a parent and child in a car. No, it's not. Right. But that is the omen.
It's
with
a
you.
Kid on a tricycle. Oh, what's going to happen now?
Yeah. Oh, you know what's going to happen.
And you'll hear this while it does. That is some of the music from the 1976 film The Omen. That is still chilling.
It's so creepy. And that scene, if you watch it without the music, let's say you put on, I don't know, a song by the Beatles over that. It's really just a priest running through the churchyard while there's a windstorm.
Right.
But you put that music on, it's not a churchyard anymore. It's a scary, hellish place suddenly. I don't even know what those voices are saying, but they're terrifying. Whatever they're saying, it's totally scary.
Does that work for you, Rafer?
You know, it is a pretty good soundtrack. That particular scene, I remember being a little bit hokey. Maybe I'm just a nitpicker, but I always remember thinking, well, if all the devil had to do is just create a big storm to kill that priest and stab him in the heart with that giant antenna that topples
right,
off the church.
Comes off the top of the church, yeah.
Like, why didn't you do that 30 minutes ago before you had that conversation with Gregory Peck? I mean, if you could do it any moment, you know, why'd you wait?
Well, now you mentioned Kubrick.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the risk of once again inserting myself into the movie date here, and no one knows, it's terrible to have three on a date, but... It just reminds me of Kubrick's last film, Eyes Wide Shut, mm-hmm. where, Kristen, there is the scene, the sort of orgy scene, and it also plays on that kind of religious thing. It's a tape loop of a bunch of priests singing backwards with their voices lowered. It's actually from the English composer Jocelyn Pook, and when she composed the piece, she called it Backward Priest. but of course, it became the masked ball in the Kubrick film. Scary stuff. I mean,
I don't know. When I have group sex, I always listen to that kind of music.
That was Kristen Meinzer. Rafer Guzman also with me. They are the co-hosts of the Takeaways Movie Date podcast. They're here in Soundcheck's House of Horrors. You know, it's the inhumanness of the most human sound that there is, our voice, sort of being backward tracked and lowered in pitch. That, to me, is what makes that so effective as a scary moment. Rafer, what about you? What's your pick for a soundtrack that really scared you?
I would have to go back to the Exorcist, the William Friedkin movie, the one that kind of started it all. I love that Exorcist theme. And I was trying to think of a movie before that had used this kind of staccato style in its horror movie soundtrack. Usually you've got what Kristen's talking about, some kind of religious motif. You've got a lot of strings. I know that Psycho used kind of the stabbing string motif.
Right.
But this quick jangly nerved kind of motif that The Exorcist had, that seemed new to me at the time, and I'd never heard that before. We've heard it a lot since, but not then.
This is some of Mike Oldfield's Tubular Bells, which became famous as the theme from The Exorcist. Thank you. Exorcist, main theme from the William Friedkin movie, picked for us by Rafer Guzman. Kristen Meinzer, you find that scary?
It's pretty creepy. I have to agree. I have to agree with Rafer. That was just tuna. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Creepy. And then there's those sharp stabbing electric guitar chords. And, so I understand what Friedkin saw or heard in this, but this is, if you listen to the whole piece by Mike Oldfield, this is like this beautiful kind of pastoral English countryside thing.
Is that right? Does it?
Yes, it does. With, you know, with like all the instruments coming in and Viv Stanchel, the narrator, going and introducing tubular bells.
I did not know that, but I do remember that album being sort of a new agey kind of landmark.
That album, well, because of the film, mostly because of the Exorcist, that album put Mike Oldfield and Virgin Records on the map. We have, you know, the Exorcist to thank for Virgin Records, Virgin Record Stores, Virgin Airlines. They put all of them on the map because this thing sold a gazillion copies.
Yeah.
Does that make it any less scary now, knowing that?
No, I guess not. It's still, and I mean, I have to say, you know, it wasn't too long ago when they re-released The Exorcist, the director's cut with the backwards spider walk scene up the staircase, and I have to say that film still just scared the living daylights out of me. Even as an adult, I took some friends who were about my age who had never seen it, and you know, we all just were leaping out of our chairs. It's a great movie.
It's terrifying. It's still terrifying.
Yeah.
When will they redo that? A la Carrie, you know, which is out yet again.
Yet again,
movie theaters, you know.
Yes, we just
It worked the first time. We've got to do it again and again.
Yeah, no one's touched that one, The Exorcist. I guess because they've made so many sequels and also various rip-offs
spoofs
as well.
And so on,
Spoofs, right.
All right. The Takeaways Movie Date podcast is co-hosted by Rafer Guzman and Kristen Meinzer, who've been with me here in the Soundcheck House of Horrors. Kristen, Rafer, great to have you guys back with us on
Thanks
Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for having us, John.
And don't forget that we want to hear who you think is the scariest musician of all time. Leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612. Or tweet about it using the hashtag #scariestmusician. Every weekday at 2 p.m. on soundcheck.org, you can hear live music being recorded right here in our studio. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., tune in to a live taping with Sun Lux, the project of composer and songwriter Ryan Lott, whose new album is an ambitious hybrid of new classical, indie rock, and electronica.
Oh, we'll shed our skin. We'll walk the other side. Oh, we'll brace for it and conquer everything. And conquer everything.
Head over to soundcheck.org to listen to a live acoustic taping with this artist, Sun Lux, tomorrow at tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. Up next on Soundcheck, it's a live performance from the Brooklyn band Teen. Stay with us. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The name for this Brooklyn-based indie pop band, Teen, comes from musician Teenie Lieberson. But the singer and multi-instrumentalist looked to the second part of her name when she needed bandmates. Teenie just called up her sisters, Lizzie and Catherine. The Liebersons all collaborated on Teen's new EP called Carolina. Here's Teen, and this song is called Big Talk, live on Soundcheck.
We'll be right back.
the band Teen live on Soundcheck with their single called Big Talk. And once again, Teeny Lieberson on guitar, keyboards and vocals, Lizzie Lieberson on keyboards and vocals, Catherine Lieberson drums and vocals, and Bushra Al-Sadi playing the bass here in our Soundcheck studio. Teeny, to you and the rest of the gang, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having us.
The new album is called, the EP that's out now is called Carolina. And at the same time that, Teeny, that you were recording Carolina, you recorded this song Big Talk, right?
Yeah, it was recorded in the same session.
Didn't make it to the EP. Why? Yeah,
it needed some touch-ups. Needed some extra stuff. So we decided to release it later.
So this album is, you're able to kind of keep that kind of psych pop sound even as it's sort of stripped down enough that you can play it live. Was that kind of the point of Carolina?
Yeah. We had such a hard time performing in Limbo after it had been recorded.
Your 2012 record.
Yeah, because everything was, it was overdub, layered over overdub, which was cool. It gave it an effect. But live, we found that it was really hard to replicate it. So we went into Carolina being like, let's just do what we can do live.
Right.
And so when we were done recording, we had a show, I think, like the next day. And we were like, oh, we don't even have to rehearse. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the what you get on the record is basically the kind of thing that you guys are doing for us here in the studio today. Now, you played with Luke Temple's band, Here We Go Magic.
I did.
That, too, is a band that had a kind of lavish kind of produced sound and stuff. So you know how to do that. Is it purely a logistical thing, or do you like the kind of stripped-down sound, the kind of tourable sound?
It just became more of a practical thing, really.
Yeah.
And also, I guess I think all of us are attracted to more of an analog sound. It's changing a little bit, funnily enough, you ask that. Feels like we're kind of moving away from that as...
Away from the analog, or...
Possibly. It's so hard to tour with analog instruments. To record with it's fine, but to tour with it, it's really, really difficult. And, you know, it's still a great sound to have. We'll definitely try and keep that. But
right. So when you say analog, you're talking about like the synthesizers.
Synthesizers. Lizzie's playing two analog synthesizers. I play one analog synth, and they're temperamental.
Right. Right. But they have a sound.
They have an unpredictable sound, which is what makes them so great.
So, Teeny, did Teen start as a solo project for you and then just kind of grew in the telling?
Yes. I had a break from touring with Here We Go Magic, and I started making these little recordings in my living room. And then I started being like, wait, these songs are actually kind of good. And then...
You sound surprised.
Well, because it was more like I was trying to just experiment and try things out. And I was like, I've always been a singer. I've always enjoyed singing. So I knew I would go back to that at some point. But I didn't expect the songs to have as much weight, I guess, as they did. And so it started catching some heat with my friends. And then it was basically like, okay, I got to start a band. And then that just kept going. So...
Well, you didn't have to go very far to find the rest of your band, apparently. So did the three of you grow up in a musical house?
Yes, very much so. Our father was a composer, and our mother played rock and roll.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Who's your father?
Peter Lieberson.
Your dad is Peter Lieberson. Wow.
Yep.
Folks who don't know, Peter Lieberson, who passed away just, 2 years ago, especially towards the end of his life, wrote some amazing songs, his Neruda songs, for example.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So, wow. So
really, cool.
Music,
you know,
really does.
Yeah.
Which means that you are then the granddaughters of Goddard Lieberson, the guy who ran Columbia Records for most of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
All right. So so the genes are there. The pedigree is there. What did your dad think? I mean, you know, he's this major classical composer. What did he think of you guys playing rock music?
Well, he unfortunately never saw this. He never saw us play together. But he, you know, he was so he encouraged everything we did. You know, he was so positive about it. So any, I did jazz for a long time, and he was happy I was doing that. And then when I got into Here We Go Magic, he loved Here We Go Magic. He saw us perform, and he was like, I've got him start making more interactive music.
Really?
Yeah. Because wow. He saw how fun it was for musicians to jam and react to each other. And
is that what the three of you did in the house? You know, I guess you're not all close enough in age to have grown up with the same music and stuff.
We actually, this is very new. Catherine's really new to the drums. So we always sang together. Singing was always a part of our, it was constant. But Catherine was a gymnast, and quite serious. So that took up all of her time. So this is like her new sport.
The band is Teen. They are playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today. We're actually going to hear a new song now from Teen. This is called Rose for You, live on Soundcheck.
Here's a rose for you, look. Here's a rose for you, look. Here's a rose for you, look.
What a neat song.
Oh, thank you.
That is called Rose for You, and that's new from the band Teenie Lieberson, with Lizzie and Catherine Lieberson and Bushra Al-Sadi performing live here in the Soundcheck studio. And, of course, Teenie, Teen, people must mistake that name for something else all the time,
all
right?
All the time. Yeah, it was kind of an... I was... It
not
was
thinking
like,
it through?
Is not that? Really, no. Because it was such a, like, whim that I was doing this thing, and I was like, I can't call it Teenie. I have a terrible name for just to have my name as the band. So, like, Teen. And it was actually before there were a lot of bands with Teen in it. It was so long ago. So then...
But there is a magazine. I mean, that's like calling your band Spin. You know, people Google your name, and they're not. It's going to take them a while to find you.
You know? I think it was because I wasn't really imagining it would become such a dedicated project.
Well, there's the EP that's out called Carolina. Big Talk is the standalone single that's out. I hope we'll get a chance to hear Rose for You at some point as well. Teenie, to you and the rest of Teen, this has been great fun. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Ben Allison is a bassist and composer who's been an important part of the New York jazz scene for the past two decades. He also wrote the theme song for WNYC's program On the Media. Ben Allison's next project, coming out in December, is called The Stars Look Very Different Today, a title taken straight from the lyrics of David Bowie's Space Oddity. But it's an album inspired by science, technology, and film, and it includes this piece called Dave, Digital Awareness Vector Emulator. Ben Allison wrote this piece for his Carnegie Hall debut last year, and we premiered an exclusive stream of this track on soundcheck.org earlier today. Then Allison and his band will be joining us in our studio in late November as well. But go to soundcheck.org right now to take a listen to the full recording. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tune in tomorrow as Soundcheck's House of Horrors continues. We'll talk with Gary McGregan, the sound editor on the FX horror series American Horror Story, Coven. He'll talk with us about what it takes to make scary sounds for a coven of witches. Plus, we'll hear from the creators of one of New York's biggest haunted houses. And we'll send two of our not-quite-as-fearless-as-we-hoped producers inside. Don't forget, you can leave us your nomination for Scariest Musician Ever on our listener line, 866-939-1612. Or tweet us with the hashtag Scariest Musician. That does it for tonight. See you back here tomorrow. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.